We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Washington.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Leonard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report for January 13, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis with Matt Lesdell of the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. In agricultural news, a potential battle is brewing between USDA and the American Meat Institute over tenderized steaks. We'll have this and other stories this half hour, and Todd Gleason will look at one way farmers can combat high input costs. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Wednesday afternoon, futures settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat at 536 and a half, up 2.5. July, 559 and three quarters, up 2. March wheat at the Board of Trade, 537, up 1.25. July, 561, down 1.75. March corn, 384, down 8.5. May, 395, down 8. July, 404 and a quarter, down 7. January beans, 983.5, up 14. March, 992.5, up 14.5. May, 999 and 3 quarters, up 14. July, 1006, up 13.25. January soybean meal, $300.50, up 510. January soybean oil, 38.63, up 37. February live cattle, 85.70, up 25. January feeders, 97.30, down 50 on the day. And those are today's settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Taking a look at AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser's two-state forecast, he says tomorrow in northern and central Illinois and in northwestern Indiana, cloudy with areas of freezing drizzle, and fog. In southwestern Illinois, cloudy with drizzle developing. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Highs ranging from 32 in far northwestern Illinois to 44 in the far south. Here's Ed's extended highlights. He says, we are now entering a prolonged freeze-thaw cycle with daytime high temperatures over the next several days, mostly in the 30s north and central and 40s in the south, and overnight lows mostly in the 20s. Low-level moisture will create patches of fog and drizzle and freezing drizzle tomorrow into early Friday. Freezing drizzle may lead to some slick spots tomorrow night into early Friday morning. And a wet weather system will pass by to our south over the weekend, but some models are now indicating that the northern edge of the rain may cross the Ohio River into southern portions of Illinois and Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The corn market, to some degree, showed us today what it was made of, in that after a pretty significant overnight decline and then that similar decline off the opening bell, it clawed back to almost even today.
Any statements that I make, of course, are Paul Cooley's and not necessarily reflective of ADM or ADM investors. That's true. It was very popular among customers, and also it was brought up by one of the leading commodity advisory services that they anticipated commodity fund buying, particularly in corn, today and late in the trading day, and it was anticipated something in the neighborhood of 20,000 to 26,000 contracts of corn. The market was substantially lower, and the markets were beat up bad overnight. And, of course, just looking at the fundamentals, the carryover, the demand side, the supply side, lack of government sponsorship of, you know, ethanol and things like that, we basically saw this basically major selling. The commodity funds, of course, some of their will be watched very carefully on Thursday, but it was the name of the game today was to buy the dip and buy it early and cover positions. And I can basically say there was a lot of playing the game today and buying the dip. And, hey, it worked, as the market did erase a lot of those horrible deficits by the close today.
In your remarks, you mentioned the D word, that being demand. When we looked through the numbers from yesterday, we came to realize that USDA put disappearance for the first quarter above that of even a year ago, and I'm looking at corn in particular, especially surprising given the lack of demand on the export market as well as how beat up the livestock market is.
Yeah, Informa Group is basically saying on exports, for example, a number of 1925, that's a good 75 million under what the USDA is projecting, and basically 50 million smaller on feed and residual. So as a result of that, a calming effect on the USD demand, and their carryover number is 1,829,000,000 bushels versus the USDA 1,764. We really don't want to beat up too much on the USDA because there's still a lot of unknowns in the equation. For example, time will tell how spring planning is going to go, just how cheap corn is going to go, and what other growing conditions around the world. But this is the best guess, and they're trying the best they can to give some sort of a projection here as far as demand in the coming year.
Meanwhile, technically, we're not out of the woods yet on this lead option March chart in that there's still a 7.25 cent gap to be filled.
The gap down looks scary on a chart, a bar chart. I noticed that a few moments ago. Glenn Ring's talking about a 5.5 year cycle in corn later this year. The big problem, though, is that the cheap dollar and this supposedly 10% unemployment in the economy and this big carryover doesn't augur very well as far as total price structure this coming year. And one of the dilemmas there, and always in the past, we were able to play buying corn acres or buying bean acres or trying to cope with ethanol demand. Unfortunately, none of those demand situations are on the table this coming year. And the farmer is going to basically have to work hard for acre distribution to get the most dollar there. We did understand, and we do understand, that the farmer has, in the last 30 days, been extremely aggressive on selling new beans and also sold some new crop corn at some pretty good levels. particularly when the inputs have come down so much from previous years.
Probably was a good idea given the lower winter wheat seedings as well as CRP acres coming back into production.
And also we're looking at a major problem in the next 30 to 60 days, another harvest of grain that's going to come in either from the piles out on the ground or the grain in the bins. And our surveys and our watchful eye indicates that there's a lot of wet corn to move into the marketplace. And, of course, the cooler temperatures control the quality situation, but with big changes in temperatures, a person has to be very careful as well as posted roads.
All right, let's turn our attention in particular then to beans. What are you seeing from today's trade there?
Well, the government was very generous about the idea of a bigger crop, a bigger yield, and a smaller carryover. And, of course, we did see beans close higher today, 14 cents. And the big factor here is that we are going to see the game of at time of shipment, either out of South America, transportation, whether there will be a transportation advantage to ship those beans out of the U.S. or South America. There will be a basis play as well as flat price plays. And the Informa group, for example, feel that the the bean carryover this coming year is going to be $285 million instead of $245 million, and that's a 40 million bushel increase over what the USDA said, and basically a 30 million over their previous report. I basically agree with the Informa people because I think that the name of the game is South American farmer, both Argentina and Brazil, are going to have so many total net beans that that will force the basis level, and they'll play the optional origin switch to South America.
And then I don't see how U.S. beans holds a $9 price level at that point.
Well, and also you will have this big abundance of acreage in the acreage mix from CRP acreage coming in and less wheat being planted. I think the normal situation is in some areas you will see some extra soybean acres actually go in the ground with this flat price drop in the soybean market.
What else are you looking at?
Well, I think that the big question that we are looking at here, too, is that the commodity funds and how is the government going to basically build on two issues, and of course treating the commercial status of the big funds as well as getting convergence in the prices between the cash and futures are all going to be very major topics on Thursday, and we'll all be glued to the news wires for that information.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a profitable day, Dave.
You too. That's Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services. He is in Oakland, Illinois. Be sure to join us this evening in Pontiac at the Elks Club for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. The panel gets underway proper at 7 o'clock. The meeting is free. We have an outstanding group of analysts to take you through yesterday and looks at the future marketing opportunities. We hope you will join us there.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, in the wake of illnesses from the latest E. coli outbreak, USDA is considering requiring special labels be placed on tenderized beef cuts. On December 24th of last year, USDA announced that Oklahoma-based National Steak and Poultry was recalling 248,000 pounds of Blade tenderized steak products after illnesses were reported in six states. The process of tenderizing beef, poking it with needles or blades to soften it or inject flavor, can potentially create an entrance into steaks below the meat's surface for the E. coli bacteria. The problem, though, according to food safety advocates, is that oftentimes consumers can't tell the difference between tenderized and non-tenderized steaks. The American Meat Institute, a group representing U.S. meat processors, disagrees with the need for labeling, AMI basing its conclusions on a 2002 risk assessment conducted by USDA said that tenderized steaks do not pose a greater risk for E. coli contamination than non-tenderized steaks. A farm state senator expressed concern yesterday that proposed cuts in crop insurance could hurt farmers' ability to manage their own risk. Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa says that he is worried about the extent of the cuts crop insurers could face. Grassley pointed out that the 2008 Farm Bill cut projected crop insurance spending through 2012 by $5.6 billion, while the reinsurance agreement being proposed by USDA could cut another $4 billion. A former congressman told AFBF members at the annual convention in Seattle that farmers should begin preparing for further cuts in farm programs because of the growing federal budget deficit. Former Representative Charlie Stenholm says, quote, "The budget cutting spending means agriculture, too. There is no defense that any of us in production ag could make to say we should be exempt because we've already paid the bill." USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has named Karen Ross of California as his chief of staff, but five key positions at USDA are still vacant. The most prominent is the Undersecretary for Food Safety. Despite several food outbreaks of foodborne illnesses in 2009 and the appointment of a high-level interagency panel to try to coordinate those issues, the position remains vacant. Caleb Weaver, a USDA spokesman, says in an email, "Until there are zero illnesses and deaths due to foodborne illness, there is work to be done," which is why Secretary Vilsack has made this a top priority. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. One thing farmers might do to deal with rising fuel and fertilizer costs is to share equipment. Todd Gleason has more with the FarmDoc team at the University of Illinois.
It costs a lot of money to buy a big tractor, think $100,000. It's a huge investment. When you look at it on the per-acre basis, say to make a single tillage pass across a field, it can cost close to $60 an acre. There are a couple of ways farmers can save money on this potential outlay, says Gary Schnitke of the FarmDoc team at the University of Illinois. They could, he says, move away from conventional tillage to strip-till, or no-till.
No-till you probably can get by with lower horsepower. Strip-till depends on how you're doing the stripping operation, because that's still what you're doing is pulling an anhydrous ammonia tank with some extra sweeps or cultivation during that tillage, and that can be a fairly big tractor that's needed to do that operation. If several farmers get together and share that tractor, and that could reduce cost on those farms that are doing strip-till.
Sharing a tractor is a big commitment, worthwhile as it may be. The question is whether or not farmers are willing to adopt equipment sharing as a cost-saving management tool.
Well, That's a good question. There's probably limited adoption, but it's also come more to the forefront, particularly on combines. As you look at the newer combines, and you know they can go over 3,000 acres, and you get much lower cost when you're going over 3,000 acres versus 1,500 acres. So, two people sharing a combine will dramatically reduce cost.
The idea is not new, but it may have more merit in these tougher economic times when farms are getting bigger. The key to staying small may be to look like 3 or 5,000 acres. Sharing equipment can help accomplish that goal. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Blaisdell of the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon, Matt. Now, why am I not hearing Matt? Hello, Matt. Are you there? I see we lost Matt on the line. Let me go ahead and read you some copy that I have put together. It says that soybean spot basis bids firmed around the U.S. Midwest on Wednesday, while corn bids weakened in the western part of the region amid very limited farmer sales of both crops, that according to dealers. Scattered sales of soybeans in the eastern Midwest, as some farmers took a bearish stance after Tuesday's big losses were noted, but most farmers remained on the sidelines, delaying sales of corn and beans. Many dealers did not take any protection, even though corn futures were expected to again open sharply lower, and of course they did this morning. They were down 16, 17 cents in the corn before clawing their way back to about 8 under by the end of the day. One dealer in Cincinnati, Ohio, said that overnight futures were ugly enough as it is. Corn bids fell by 10 to 18 cents per bushel in the far western Midwest, while corn bids rose slightly in the eastern grain belt. Soy bids were mostly steady to firm, but fell by about 5 cents per bushel in Des Moines, Iowa. And farmers in the western Midwest continued to deliver large amounts of both crops to meet existing contracts after transportation was slowed last week by severe winter storms. AM 580 has a listener website for your use. It's at willag.org. On it, you will find all kinds of useful information, including reports from USDA, the ability to subscribe to our agricultural podcasts, our analysis, our audio analysis of all of our programs, as well as our weekly agricultural e-letter. Comes out every weekend, has technical and fundamental analysis, takes a look at what happened the week before and the week coming up. That's at willag.org. I'll be back in 2 minutes with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Governor Pat Quinn says he wants to overhaul the Illinois tax system to make it fair and also bring in more money from state government. The Democratic governor says Illinois taxes the poor too heavily. He says taxes could be cut for 5 million people through tax credits, bigger personal exemptions, and other changes. In his first formal State of the State address today, Quinn also acknowledged the state faces a huge budget crisis. He says spending has already been cut significantly, so now Illinois needs more tax revenue. Quinn did not propose any specific increase in his nearly 90-minute speech. In the past, however, he has backed a 50% increase in income taxes with greater exemptions to reduce the burden on families. The governor also highlighted a list of accomplishments ranging from ethics reform to passing a public works program. Quinn also says a plan to sell an unused prison to the federal government in Thompson for housing terrorism suspects is another move that will create much-needed jobs. A former Republican state lawmaker says the Quinn address provided little in terms of specifics. Rick Winkle with the University of Illinois Institute for Government and Public Affairs says while the governor pointed out cuts that needed to be made, including pay cuts and furloughs, he says they hardly address Illinois' massive structural deficit. And Mike Lawrence, the former Public Policy Institute director at SIU Carbondale, noted this was the first time an Illinois governor was giving the State of the State address while people are preparing to vote in a primary for the office of governor. Lawrence says that may be part of the reason Quinn's speech was short in terms of specifics. An official with the American Red Cross office in Champaign says they're waiting to see what its role will be in sending aid to the earthquake-ravaged capital of Haiti. Susan Connolly of the Central Illinois chapter of the Red Cross says the national organization is already accepting financial donations earmarked for Haitian earthquake relief. The money will be held until it can be distributed to the Haitian Red Cross for its efforts. In the meantime, Connolly says the local chapter may eventually be called upon to host a website to help people find loved ones, or it may ultimately send volunteers there once needs for relief are better known. Danville police are investigating a morning shooting that has sent one man to the hospital. Spokesman Larry Thomason says two subjects tried to enter a home on Buchanan Street around 9, and one was shot. He was taken to Ravino Medical Center. Police are still searching for the second subject. I'm Jeff Bossert.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Temperatures moderating across the Midwest. That's the good news.
That is the good news.
But the bad news, I suppose, is in the evening hours, it's still below freezing.
Yes, you can't have everything, and it is still mid-January, believe it or not. I think that for a lot of the Midwest, we're, 20 degrees above where we were a week ago, probably, in quite a few areas, maybe even more than that for the northern plains. But so this is a major improvement. We can't complain too much at this point, especially because things aren't going to be all this nice down the road. We are already looking at a more active weather pattern coming on a week from now. This is going to bring on a frequent occurrence of precipitation back across the Midwest. And because we're going to be starting from a warmer base, we're probably going to see a lot more rain and freezing rain and snow coming with this next round of precipitation, which, by the way, doesn't really get started until about this time next week. So we've got a chance that the models will back off of this theory at some point. But I do think an increase in precipitation frequency is going to be due about that time. So we will be bringing on that moisture, and if you recall, there's a bunch of snow on the ground out there, and that's going to have to melt away, and of course the ground is saturated underneath it, and you bring all that together with new precipitation, and we're going to have some flooding to deal with, I think, at some point towards the latter part of next week.
So the question then becomes, when do the Dakotas get the corn out?
Yeah, that is the question. And I'm not quite sure it's going to happen anytime real soon. They are seeing some melting snow in parts of the region now, but it's very slow. We're getting just above freezing in the afternoons, and it's freezing up again at night. And this will be accelerated as we get towards the weekend and early part of next week. That's when they will be the warmest. But they are not going to lose all of the snow. They will still keep a fair amount of it. There's still some areas out there that are still have over 20 inches of snow on the ground, and they've got 1 to 3 inches of water equivalent in that snow. And as it melts, it's going to create flooding of its own up that way. So we don't want to melt it too fast. So in answer to your question, I think it'll be a few weeks still yet before they have an opportunity to get that corn out. We do have another period of stormy weather coming up for them as well. So a lot of the snow they lose in the next 5 days or so, they're going to get back again by the end of next week.
What does the El Nino pattern tell you?
Well, El Nino should give us a warmer than usual bias across the northern part of the U.S. and southern Canada. And I put should be that way in quotes because we have experienced that significant cold surge here in the recent weeks, which totally interrupted El Nino. But if we assume normal El Nino conditions for a while, we'll not only have the warmth up there, but we will also have below average precipitation occurring across the heart of the Midwest, extending from near the Delta, northern Delta in particular, up through eastern parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, into southeastern Michigan. Those areas should see less than usual precipitation during the balance of winter, and we'll probably see temperatures in this particular El Nino year a little cooler than usual. And we will be seeing the cold air come back, and I think that will probably happen as early as the last days in January and into February.
Thanks, Drew.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.